Oh, good morning, Malev. Relic Bud, Malev, the Shinobi.
Relic Bud.
Relic Bud.
Relic Premium. Bud 002.
Wait, is it the second or a third? I don't know.
No, I'm saying I'm the Relic Bud 002.
Oh, you're the second Bud.
Yeah, and then we'll put two zeros because there's probably going to be...
There are many.
Yeah, a lot of Relic Buds, you know. So if you want to give yourself a number...
Are you an ally to yourself?
Am I an ally to myself? Wait, re-say that? We'll caveat.
Am I Relic Bud 001?
Oh. If
you aren't your own ally.
I think so. Because it's like your title at the top. Instead of Sean Sutter, it should just say Relic Bud 001.
Relic Bud Prime.
Relic Bud Prime.
Yeah, so we are here recording a fresh conversation in the studio. And this week I was supposed to do Relic Blade solo work, but instead
hammer.
But then I got slammed with some of that sweet, sweet depression.
Oh, that's great stuff.
Which is probably, I think, as an artist, it's probably like part of that swinging fallout of like a huge creative output.
Oh man!
So like, if I make too much stuff, I'm spent and I have to recover. So during my recovery week, I've just been like shipping orders and, you know, keeping the business going, which I think is one of the things that's so great about my Metal King Studio setup, is that I can expect to have that pendulum swing of creativity versus being like kind of not being able to be creative. And so I can focus on things like sorting models into packaging, or you know, dealing with emails or shipping orders and all of that stuff. So this week was more of an admin week for me, but
I saw you got some painting done on your Cretaceous Commandos.
Yeah, it's true. I finished a set of prototypes to be able to like play test Cretaceous Commandos. So that'll be a lot of fun. I think theme and everything's so important for a game that before I try and get other people invested in playtesting at all, I try to deliver kind of a package that has some of the flavor already added. Because just doing a raw game mechanics playthrough, I just can't imagine a game being fun without.
Yeah, no flavor. Doubt. I no doubt. And as a quote unquote playtester type person, I have a hard time. I'm like, you know, I'm not a true playtester. I'm a passionate playtester. Where it's like, if I'm extremely passionate, I will playtest. But if it's like something that, you know, just, would you like to playtest this? You know, I would probably just be like, I am the worst person. Because if it's at a prototype stage, if I have to use chits or my own minis and imagine this is that, I'm going to have a hard time imagining that.
I'm having a funny thought about game design and playtesting. You know, card games or like with just like a standard playing card deck, so I don't know, you know, poker or whatever, that those games don't have a theme or like lore. But then I'm reflecting and like absolutely no one is like invested in poker without being a little bit allured by the lore of some kind of like Wild West cowboy or like a high roller or like the coolness of someone that's like you know, got the game, because it's such a psychological game, because the game mechanics aren't great for poker, but the lore behind it, that like you have to be a really good liar, you have to be like a really cool under pressure type of person, all that lore is what sells poker. I bet. I mean, I don't know. I haven't.
No, I could see it. And I mean, money.
Pose that question. Be fun to pose that question to like someone that takes it like really seriously. Like, how much of the, like, what do they think of? Do they think of that cowboy movie? I forget what it was called. But where they're like on a steamboat and doing poker.
Anyways, I don't know if I've seen that one.
It doesn't matter. But yes. I'm just having a funny thought about how, like, are there games without lore? Like, are there games without setting? Yeah, but they have a place in culture. You know, like, what do you think about someone who plays chess?
And like, yeah, is that
something that appeals to a hardcore chess player? Like, do they like that it's super challenging and implies a level of intelligence, implies, you know, a level of like stripped down balance, like it's the most balanced game, right? So
if I were to think about it, I definitely do think there's a level of intelligence isn't a word, but like mastery is, because they use the term grandmasters for their chess grandmasters. Mm-hmm. You know, and what it sort of makes me think about is my pops plays solitaire.
Mm.
And he plays solitaire a lot. He just plays it on his phone, just a little solitaire on the phone, you know. Just, and I just find it, I find it interesting because there's absolutely no lore going on with that that
yeah,
game.
Yeah, you're right, because I don't think a solitaire player thinks like, oh yeah, I'm like an awesome grandma.
Yeah. No, my it feels
tea, throw down some cards.
I'm an awesome grandma. Yeah, no, I definitely don't. My pops don't be thinking that he's an awesome grandma when he plays solitaire. I don't know what he'd be thinking. Yeah, but
that's a good. I mean, solitaire can be unwinnable, right? Yeah, I think so. I think that you can run.
I think that is the case. But I think if you're good enough, which is very, I don't want to use the word like easy to achieve, but if you be playing solitaire a lot for whatever reason, it does seem to be something that you can reasonably beat. It just becomes like this little, it's like a Rubik's cube almost, yourself, like thing.
If you give yourself unlimited playthroughs of the deck, then yeah, you can time posted before you reshuffle. Anyways, it's been a while since I've actually played solitaire.
But yeah, and I've never played solitaire.
That ties into what the topic we wanted to talk about
is, which is solo play, solitaire blade.
Yeah, and I think right now where we're at with it, because I wrote a bunch of lore. You wrote a bunch of the rules. I kind of came back and adjusted them based on sort of my expectation for a stripped down Relic Blade style, and we like co-authored or collaborated on like creating cool game mechanics. We've got a book that's pretty much laid out with art and original illustrations, lore and monsters and scenarios, but where we're at now is difficulty.
Yeah.
And like, how difficult should it be? Because we're getting feedback from playtesters that are like, I've never won.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when we played through it, I think we won.
We lost our first time. I think we died our first time, and then we reset everything, and then we really combined. And well, we also kind of lost the first time, I think, because you had wondered about like choosing a suboptimal like character, so I think you maybe
I think that was a side, because we lost other times, but that time we lost because I brought Gilblins like 2 5-point fish and so yeah that was an issue. But and then also dealing with exactly how strong the monsters will be, like whether you should have the strong monsters respawn or weaker monsters respawn, because there's like unlimited waves of monsters you have to try and escape. So that's interesting, trying to figure out the the difficulty balance.
Yeah, and initially,
I don't want to deliver like we're trying to deliver something that's going to be really, really good, and like a very cool gaming experience, top to bottom, like full on Relic Blade lore, pushing the story farther after Storms of Coral. But like, we do run into the question of how balanced it should be, because especially with a solitaire game, if it's too easy, like why'd I even get out my models?
Yeah.
And yeah, if it's too difficult, I don't know. We could add I've been playing a bit of Hades this week. Have you played any of that?
I haven't played that, but I've heard good things about that game.
Yeah, it's like a roguelike, top-down, super fast action RPG, where you're like lots of dashing and attacking and using special moves and combos and collecting power-ups. And that game connects a bit to Cretaceous Commandos, so I wanted to like think about how they deal with power-ups and play and positioning in a bullet hell type game. But it also ties back to Relic Blade, where I think maybe part of it is that roguelike experience, where a real roguelike game or rogue game, you get one try and you die, and then it's you have to start from the beginning with nothing. Whereas the more modern versions include light upgrades. So if you die, you come back and then you can like advance on a skill tree or whatever to try and make it easier your next mm-hmm. go.
Yeah, like a generational like mechanic or something.
Yeah, and with Solitaire, the original card game, you know, you can go through the deck multiple times, and as you know what's in there, you can kind of predict how you have to strategize. So I think maybe that could be a mechanic, a balancing mechanic, where we'd be able to keep the difficulty high, but have, if you fail, there be like a reset mechanic where you like gain some kind of boon or something. Yeah.
As pondering all those questions myself, hold up. You're say that one more time.
So much. I don't really want to add too many more mechanics to it, to the game, because it's going to be like more isn't necessarily more. You know, I want people to be able to execute it without having to flip through the book all the time, or adding new sections to the book. So yeah, it's an important question, like how hard is too hard?
Yeah, when I was putting together the thing and kind of asking those questions myself, because I think the feedback on it being difficult has come from the ultimate evolution of the monster design. Because originally, when I was designing the scenarios, it was the idea was there's two types of scenarios. You have trap scenarios, and then you have item scenarios. I can't remember. Challenge scenarios is what they were called. Mm-hmm. And there's three and three, and they kind of framing them that way helped me think about how they work, how I want them to work and feel different in the design, and just like how to mechanically just like navigate around the existing framework. And the idea was that, well, if in a challenge scenario you have to do something that, you know, in order to succeed the challenge, that's going to be how you open the door, and that'll be based on a certain item that you get. And the trap scenarios will simply be survival based. It'll be about trying to get out of the room as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. And based on those two kind of frameworks, that's how I was thinking about designing the monsters originally. You know, if it was a trap room that was using, say, the noxious bombs for example, the Noxious Bomb, no, Corrosive Vial, the Corrosive Vial, that is the one that reduces armor by one when you throw it. And so the idea was, if in this trap room, the Corrosive Vial is going to reduce your armor by one if you set off the trap, but in the activation chart, your character can catch the vial out of the air, and that's how you earn the upgrade. And then because the upgrade is minus one armor, then I'm thinking, okay, the enemies should have high armor then. So when we're using the design in the monster chart, we give them the humanoid trait, and then the heavy armor. So boom, now they're up to three armor. So then it sort of becomes like this little, a tiny like micro puzzle in the scenario where, yes, all you have to do is kill the monsters and survive, and get out. There is an element of kind of like that roguelite learning, you know, at some point it will come across, hopefully, to the player. Oh, that's what I do with this. You know, that's why.
Yeah, because it's why true. I got this. The way the scenarios are built, we're hopefully giving you the tools you need.
Yeah, exactly.
But you have to figure out the encounter.
Yeah, and the activation chart in itself has that, for better or worse, as a sort of byproduct of its design, to where on your first turn, you're going to be, and you know, thinking about it like abstractly, it really sort of scales up similarly to the traditional mode of Relic Blade, which is just me versus you. In the first and second turn, those are kind of some of the most exciting turns, even though they're the things that there were kind of the least happens, because that's when the game, you kind of just don't know how the game's gonna unfold. And then in that first turn and in the second turn is kind of when the picture starts forming in your head, and that complete like almost cluelessness of like how this is gonna happen, what's gonna happen, where is he gonna move his guys, where am I gonna move my guys right now. The sort of same thing happens with the activation chart, where on your first and second turns, you kind of don't even really know what you want to roll, what you don't want to roll. You're just going to throw the dice, really. You can read it, you know, and be like, one's bad, two's bad. And, you know, and that's how it's designed, that like one's bad and two's bad. And it's supposed to be easy like that. But at the same time, you as the player, how you're supposed to adjust what you do, you know, in your activations to try and account for the possibilities of the activation chart, is something that only starts to happen as you interact with it, you know, in that same way that as the game unfolds. So that there is a skill element in it as well. And another thing that's kind of curious to think about when we talk about solo play, and I mentioned the word skill, and we talk about difficulty, is that it naturally the rules are designed with the Relic Blade rules in mind, and that's all of them, you know, every corner of the Relic Blade rule set, and also these slight new additions and changes to some core rules, such as monsters are not going to target disabled models. Like, this is a straightforward like rules change. That if you don't play, quote unquote, correctly, if you don't play by the rules, the game can be either easier or harder, which is something to kind of think about as well. And that's when I'm trying to like write the rules and think about, you know, because you say we don't want to add too much, don't want to make it too complex, but then there's even still these little unique elements of the Relic Blade like rule set that I'm not sure what to really do or resolve when it comes to this or that. You know, there's still a lot of combinations that I haven't really encountered or filled with, and there's still a lot of things to kind of figure out with it. But when it comes to the feedback that we've gotten now, the monsters, because like I said, originally I was designing the monsters to kind of reflect the scenario design using the monster generator in the book. But now it's evolved into this whole new narrative tableau of a kind of like, and I'm stoked on this because narratively I think it's really cool. I think for the future of writing scenarios, further adventures and things like that, did we call him the Ogg-Soroth or the
Ogg-Sul?
The Ogg-Sul.
Yeah.
The Ogg-Sul.
Yeah, the trolls.
They've grown from a wild idea into the Relic Blade world, and to me, I'm thinking about kind of like it's not the best comparison or analogy, but like the Tyranids in 40K are this kind of like equalizing force that as players you can play them, but narratively they're sort of set on the board to be like the end boss that is seemingly undefeatable based on how it works. And not to say that the Ogg-Soroth are this undefeatable end boss, but they sort of serve to me in my mind as this outward force that could be used in games of Relic Blade to kind of be this new emergent threat on the world.
Yeah, because before, when you first wrote the dungeon crawl, it was wild monsters from the wild monster chart.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I mean, like, oh, it's a small beast with venomous bite. And then when I got into it, I started like imagining the lore and imagining the monsters and sculpting creatures for it, which is good because it's Relic Bladey to have like cool new monsters, and like it's a fun thing. But
oh, you know,
but it plays back to like, we aren't sure. Like when I switched out some of the monsters. And
so, hold on, like, say that one more time. When you switched out the monsters?
Oh, just like, yeah, because we switched out the monsters from the ones you designed to the ones that matched my sculpts and
the imagination.
Art,
yeah.
Then that's where things kind of like disconnected a little bit in the difficulty. But I mean that'll be easy to circle back around on.
Yeah, and there's also one thing I want to mention too that I've been reminded of, because I mean, man, this has been so long in the making as well, that I'm just like remembering aspects of it. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. And initially too, we're now following the narrative events of the Corral campaign, where originally the solo campaign was about a return to the decrepit depths. And the kind of problem that we faced there is that while we had lots of setting, lots of, you know, foundation for storytelling, and then in combination with that, I converted the document that we used for the global campaign into a more traditional two-player kind of adventure setting. So there was like a lot of ideas about the Decrepit Depths area and monsters and setting and kind of using that. But because that was born in Tabletop Simulator, and we were able to so easily create quote-unquote like brand new Relic Blade assets for it, that really felt like it's kind of like true home. And while we have great beetle monsters in the Decrepit Depths, this idea of sculpting these very unique monsters to kind of bring out just for this thing without really understanding like their wider usage in the Relic Blade world, this didn't really make as much sense, so shifted the whole thing to kind of be narratively, instead of taking place after the events of the Decrepit Depths, it takes place after the events of the Storms of Caral. Yeah. And in the way I like the way that narratively the Storms of Caral campaign kind of sets this picture that I think kind of perfectly plays into the beginning scenario of the solo, where you're falling down into the into the cavern with, you know, your desperate warband.
Yeah, and I hope, I mean, because the solo is connected to the Caral Kickstarter, I think keeping the events within the like Caral region makes sense.
For sure.
I mean, it's crazy because the Storms of Caral Kickstarter was like 2 years ago, and it took so long to deliver, and then got slammed with all these other projects, and then trying to get this organized, and then now that the document's done, realizing how important playtesting is for balance and everything on solo stuff. It's the classic Relic Blade problem of being tied to me, in that like I can't do just a simple thing. I'm always getting too far ahead of myself and then getting too deep. So I feel bad that, I mean, honestly, I feel bad that it's not available yet. But I also am so determined to deliver something very good that I've kind of like, the longer it's taken, the higher stakes it is to try and make it decent. But I think that it's terrific as it is, and I could probably release it as it is without even adjusting the difficulty.
Yeah, no doubt.
I bet once we're done with Kublai Khan, should be able to get it out within.
I think a so too, of, because like, I've got fresh ideas that I think are going to be the thing that will kind of put us over the edge, and just with some slight adjustments to maybe some monsters and stuff that's in this scenario, it's like we're really right there. What is unanswered is kind of like, what exactly do you want to do with the project, and how exactly do want to get the Ogsul out?
I was whining to Sarah about that on Sunday. We took a trip down to Costco, and on the drive I was whining about how like I just want to be done, like I want to deliver this project, but I've got to figure out like which figures I should make available, because right now, you know, it's like a dozen monsters, and a dozen monsters at $10 per figure is a lot to ask, right? And so, well, do I just use fewer monsters? Well, will the game even be balanced? Like, what, how am I going to sculpt them, or not sculpt them, but how, what material should I offer them in? Should I stick with metal,
a lot of questions experiment, to answer.
Or should I, what do they come in a box set? Do I have to do a Kickstarter? If I do a Kickstarter, if what would a new player buy? Because solo is for you to use your existing Relic Blade collection to fight against the solo elements.
Yeah.
Or the like, or it's more like player versus environment, video games terms, but like, you. You run into all these product design questions that are very complicated, and because things are developing weird with shipping costs and commodities for metal and all that, it's a lot for me to manage, and sometimes it's easier to just be like, I don't know, I think I need to do a Kickstarter, but then that opens up a bunch more questions. So I think right now I'm kind of leaning toward deliver the PDF to the Kickstarter backers, original Kickstarter backers, and then publish a print copy of the book and Ogsoul figures, and then probably deliver them with cards, but it'd be multiple figure packs, you know, like a faction set size pack with monster cards. I already don't even know.
And now, y'all that are listening, if you've been wondering, because I know people have been clamoring, and throughout the pandemic, there's been plenty of other companies that, you know, rewriting other games to put out, you know, quote unquote, solo content, solo conversions. And that ultimately, though, that's kind of what they end up being, is sort of like solo conversions. And while the effort, I appreciate the effort all the time, and I'm sure that ultimately I kind of assume that if a designer tries to design something and put it out, that it's fun, you know, it's not fun, like, that the whole idea is for it to be fun and good. But my ideas with Relic Blade Solo have always been less about, because if we could write rules that were like, yo, take your collection of adversary, take your collection of advocate, draw four, and then build these like war bands, and then roll on this, and then play against yourself with like these suggestions on like what to do in order to ultimately play a game of Relic Blade against yourself, but maybe with a set of extra rules and text so that it like frames it that it's you against the game, as opposed to like you just play with yourself, you know. I really was thinking about, and we mentioned it, I think it was last episode, that Relic Blade has so many modes in like the Relic Blade system, TM, which has never really, we don't talk about it like it's a system, Relic Blade system, but ultimately that's exactly what it is. And that original framework can be translated into these different formats that I think can be, for some people, their whole experience with it, you know, because I know people that enjoy Relic Blade but have no one to play with, you know. And that's, and the reason why they like Relic Blade is because they like Sean's art, or, you know, something like that. And there's this, like, this concept of like playing Relic Blade is actually like a far-flung idea that doesn't really seem that accessible, because, oh, I live in X country or X city, and, you know, closest guy to me is all these miles away. The only way I'll ever play Relic Blade is if I go to Adepticon or something like that, you know. And it's like, this whole format, I wanted to be a way that we could just have a style of play, you know,
for people. And I think also we are intentionally laying the groundwork for future content.
Yeah.
So moreover, like, one, Relic Blade is an action RPG. Mm-hmm. So being able to play an action RPG, player versus environment, you know, characters co-oping their way through a dungeon or to a mountaintop or to fight a mad wizard or to, you know, destroy a cursed relic. Like, all that stuff is so fundamentally vital to my vision of being able to play in the Relic Blade world that it just couldn't be, like, solo couldn't be just like a tag on thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we couldn't just say like, oh, to play Relic Blade solo, all you have to do is like spawn these wild monsters and then like, that's it. Like, we really wanted to create an engine that captures Relic Blade's like sleek, highly tactical, lots of control over the characters, interesting upgrades through the cards, all of that stuff in a dungeon crawl or like action RPG package or delivery, a game adventure, right? So it's taken a lot longer because of mainly COVID problems. You know, the extension of COVID problems involves all kinds of things, right? But I think where we're at with it now is so good.
Oh yeah.
Like, it then also lays the foundation for us to be able to, each time I am able, each time I'm writing a new supplement, including adventures that are player versus environment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could even be asides where, you know, where players that were rivals have to play this co-op mission because of the events of the campaign that was.
Oh yeah,
campaign. Like, I think of the mission in Path of Desecration, where the ground falls out from beneath
the Blood Temple one.
Yeah, yeah, and, beneath Vandas Greycloak and his crew against the Lone Guard, and they're in the bottom depths of that dungeon that's like in these pools of blood. Like, that would be a great moment where those characters are forced to interact with each other as allies, you know? Not yeah. that you, but just an example, or even different aside situations, but and then again with the Ogg Sul, the like wild monster, well, organized wild monsters, I guess, that warband would also be able to form a more robust foundation for being able to play or having that threat in other campaigns. So there's so many cool places to go from here.
I'm with it. Yeah, I think that with thinking, we were talking about campaign craft last week, and that's kind of another, you know, that's another bullet point to kind of what I was saying just a little bit ago, that the Relic Blade system, like, I'm trying to think of like a visual metaphor, but it is kind of like taking out particular toys from the toy chest and like choosing which ones to leave out and which ones to kind of include in your session. And the concept of, we're playing a traditional head-to-head campaign, but on mission 3, when we do the temple defense mission,
mm-hmm.
it's gonna feature wild monster Ogg Sul dudes that are also attacking us, right? And then because of that narrative, then we're both gonna play this little like mini campaign that features like trying to get to the source of these like Ogg Sul.
Or like with the Storms of Corral, it's that the main heroes, champions of Corral, made it to the top of the mountain and played through the campaign.
Yeah,
like that's what you did. And then narratively, the heroes that didn't make it to the top and fell into ravines and crevasses, and as the mountain was breaking apart, fell down into these catacombs, and then they have to work together to hope to escape. And so I think in that same way, if in the future I was being able to write a campaign, that I would have space for like a parallel campaign, and that those core rules would already be established. So I could just be delivering the scenarios and the lore rather than so much basically like a new rule book where there's the how you play solo, like how you activate a monster, what monsters pay attention to, you know, all that sort of like bookkeeping.
So there's a term, I think it's called transmedia storytelling. I think that's like the official term. And I first encountered it with The Matrix. And in The Matrix 1 comes out, super great movie. Culturally, just game changer. Also, like, movie game changer. Some time goes on, Matrix 2 comes out. And I'm sitting there watching that, enjoying that a great deal, you know, super styling, that's great. At the same time, or just after launch, a game comes out for PlayStation 2 called Enter the Matrix. Kind of not a great game, but there was some cool aspects of it. But what was interesting about it for me, also, because slight backup, the Animatrix also came out. And there's a movie in the Animatrix called The Last Journey of the Osiris, The Last Ride of the Osiris, or something like that. And in that story, it's about a crew that is essentially trying to get a message down to Zion, because they see a whole bunch of sentinels amassing. And in the animation, the lady has to jack into the Matrix and run in the Matrix to a mailbox and put in some mail that says, Sentinel Army bad, be scared. And then, you know, the episode, that animation ends and that crew's fate is sealed. Then the movie thing happens, right? And then I'm playing Enter the Matrix, the game, and there's a mission in the first mission where you have to go to the post office. You have to go to the post office to get the mail message that the lady in the Animatrix put in the mailbox that tells the people in the movie what is going to happen. And I'm sitting there and I was just like, that's amazing. They told me a connected story because I was like interested in playing this, all these different stories, you know, from these different angles. It connected them in these different things. And it like clicked in my brain. And I was just like, that's so cool. I didn't know anything that did that. Now it's pretty commonplace, especially with like big IPs and big franchises and stuff. But point is, I wanted to mention that because that's what I'm thinking about when I think about the future of Relic Blade, is this concept of, for lack of a better term, like transmedia storytelling, but it's not through different medias, it's through different formats of Relic Blade, to where we have
to connect the main storyline to these like sub adventures or the
you know, and connect solo play events to grander, more head-to-head campaigns and narrative campaigns, and really try and give this kind of like this narrative, you know, tapestry that is interesting and connected, like the Relic Blade connected universe, you know, with these events and characters and things that are occurring.
Yeah, and then the perennial curse of just like, there's not enough hours in a day to keep up with everything I want to be able to make.
Oh my
gosh.
And then
there's not enough like creative juice inside my chambers to be able to execute it properly, you know, so.
Bro, these last weeks, like, for, I don't even know why, but like, I've just been designing so much little like ideas about Relic Blade and stuff are just forming, you know. And we talk about like getting distracted and doing these other things, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe I should take a look into the solo document and see what and then I'm just like, how about this other completely unconnected idea about a Relic Blade adventure, you know? And then I've spent like 45 minutes just writing up, yeah, and so it'll be about this guy, and he's gonna go over here, and when he wears the hat, you know, it's just like, oh, and I'm just like, wait, why am I doing this? And I'm just like, I don't know, I just got these ideas, these ideas that come to me, I just gotta write them down.
I know, and like, I can imagine, because I've gotten messages from people who are annoyed that they don't have Relic Blade solo. They feel like I've failed a promise I made to them. And I get it. I wish that it was done. I wish that everything was delivered. Like, I can't really fix how difficult the plague has been for me. And I can't really change how much I've got done. And I can also see someone being annoyed that I didn't finish that, but I was able to write Sludge and an expansion for Sludge, and now I launched a Relic Blade, or the Relic Buds podcast, and I've been talking about a dinosaur commando game, you know, and then like, and that I sculpted, you know what, 20 miniatures suddenly for that commando game, and the commando game isn't done, the miniatures aren't in production, and here I am trying to figure out just like some balancing issues on the solo stuff before I deliver it. And it's like, listen guys, I'm just as I'm probably more fed up than anyone.
About and this. Also but. I'm going to Sean's house next week of the time of recording, you know, and that for better or for worse is that that's proving to be a fertile and crucial design, like connection block there, you know, being in the same room.
Storms of Coral was going to be some cards, some figures, and like a faction set worth of scenario. You know, like a one page pamphlet with like a scenario. Yeah. That was my goal for the Kickstarter, and no box, no book, no. You know, none of that stuff. Like, the book was not part of the Kickstarter, and the solo play was not part of the Kickstarter. But through stretch goals, the book and box weren't even stretch goals. They just were.
I think there was just things you wanted.
When you and I hung out, I felt like I had the story I needed to tell. And so I just used the Kickstarter money to pay for producing a book, right? And it's sort of crazy because, like, a businessman shouldn't make that choice. You should deliver what you said you were going to do and not more. But instead, I delivered more than I intended and also haven't delivered a solitaire mode. And people are annoyed because some people, you know, bought it expecting that, like...
Yeah, or...
Stretch glue cord.
They're excited engaging about that.
Yeah, and so it's good, but it's also like I am trying to get it done, but what I want out of it is more than I can deliver quickly because I feel like it's so important.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
And I think there's something that's interesting too, because you said like a better businessman or a businessman would deliver, you know, what he said, and that's there's some wisdom in that statement for sure, but there's also just this. There's, even though what you are ultimately producing at the end of the day isn't so to speak unique, there's plenty of people producing these little miniature fantasy war games and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that being said, it's easy to put Relic Blade in the same basket with all of its quote unquote competitors or whatever. But what is unique is your situation, you know, and that investment to make a box, like we were talking about making the Coral starter a two-player starter set, you know. Yeah. Like, and that's kind of like what it morphed into is like, yeah, we need it to be a two-player starter set. We want
well,
to
that
be
was the thing is like
this great entry,
the blisters that the blisters that the faction sets come in, these plastic blisters, I made sure that the deck of cards would fit in here and the figures would fit in here.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so that was
that.
The intention, but the problem is that like a booklet can't fit in that, and so then I ended up paying to print the boxes for the Kickstarter, and then because of COVID I had to try and use a US-based printer instead of China. And they delivered such poor quality boxes to me, but there was nothing I could do about it except then deliver a Kickstarter that arrived, countless of those must have arrived just in these smashed, nasty little like pieces of cardboard that cost me a ton of money.
Yeah.
And made the whole project look like it was run by an idiot. It's so embarrassing. I'm so cripplingly embarrassed about how that, because it was it was an extra thing that I wanted to make the game look better, and it ultimately made it look worse.
Well, we've talked about like Relic Blade on shelves and stuff, and it is like a balance that you have to play, because when we go to the cons, this shit look nice.
Yeah, yeah,
it looked nice. They look great, you know. Mail,
fine. They're a little bit like they could stand to be glossier and not, because they like the printing cracked.
Yeah.
And then the crack, but you can see the white cardboard from like through the art of where the art is cracked. But like, yeah, there, as long as you're really careful with the boxes, I can like display them at a con and they look really good. But man, they didn't stand up to being shipped, and certainly not on the international scale. And yeah. Now because of that, I have to get custom cut packaging, like when I ship stuff out in boxes, the literature mailers, I have to get a custom laser cut box to fit the Relic Blade box set in and book to protect it to ship it. So it's like, it's I guess
it's like juggling about
it, but it's like you can keep trying to produce something high quality and have a bunch of experience about how to do that, and then still get thrown under the bus by printers, by delivery problems, shipping problems, logistics of the class of mail. It's 1 ounce heavier than the class of mail that you planned for, and so you can't even use that class of mail. You know, there's so many logistics problems that run into that. It takes a big toll on me emotionally, actually, as a like kind of an artist trying to manage running a business. And
trying,
so
it's like trying to juggle, like, but someone threw all the balls to you, but you told them to. But you don't know how to juggle, you know? And so you're just like, you're trying to catch 13 things at the same time.
You could hire someone
to help you juggle, yeah.
That, but at the same time, do I make enough money?
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the piles that you're juggling is a money pile. And, yeah, it's not tied together. It's just, it's constant flying all over the place, yeah. You know? So
yeah, like trying to manage the sludge range, and so having Blacksite Studio do it. But then, you know, Blacksite Studio, they do things differently than I would, and I just have to let it be out of my, you know, not necessarily bad stuff, but like, you know, shipping classes, they have their own limitations because they ship MDF that's so heavy. So like, whereas I can use different classes of mail because rarely I ship things that are more than 2 pounds. So like, it just, yeah, there's such a trade-off of like, I'm trying to be hands-on, trying to keep quality high, but then I need to manage all this stuff. Anyways, it's funny. I guess since this is a Metal King Studio podcast, I don't have to feel too bad about talking about Metal King Studio management. But it's funny because
that's sort of what we're talking about, you know. And then also, well, yeah, this is our little our platform to kind of, you know, let people know what's going on with things, you know. And yeah, I think
because like laying out a PDF of the rules, you have to choose a size for the paper and for the book. And then if you're choosing the size of the book, you need to know how much it's going to cost to ship that book. You got to know what kind of envelopes it'll fit in. You got to know, you know, like, it's just funny because trying to keep up with everything, but I have not been because of, you know, all kinds of problems, health problems, and then also logistics problems. But yeah. That said, like, solo is awesome, and I don't think we're far from finishing it, but this, the beginning of the year with Adepticon being back on and KublaCon being back on the schedule, like that's kind of for those months that's what I have to be doing. Like I can't be really producing other things.
Yep. And like I said, y'all, next week I'm headed to Cali and we got at least two long drives, at least four, if we're counting the airport drives. Yeah. So we're gonna get a lot done. Get a lot done, you know. So look forward to it. I think it'll conclude this episode. I always think about cool stuff to talk about when we turn off the camera, but that's just the nature of the beast, you know. Mm-hmm. Where it's how
it takes me a little while to like wake up my brain and get back into gear of like what organizing thoughts. Hopefully I didn't ramble too much.
No, I think I'm feeling the same, but when we came in, I think we did okay. But all right, my man. And thank you everyone for tuning in. It's been Relic Buds episode 3. I think it's three.
Always think it's funny when I listen to podcasts and like, guys, how do you not write down the episode number and know what it is? And here we are on like episode 0 to 1. I don't think we've gotten past a single episode without forgetting what the numbers are. The mm-hmm. numbers don't matter. Maybe it's the dates that matter. It's May right now, right?
Yes.
So this is Relic Bloods May 2022 edition.
Yeah. AKA 03 possibly. But all right, y'all. Signing off. It's Malev.
Love you guys.
Peace.